Norman Chan.
Hey, Will.
Do you know why I grew a beard?
Because it makes you look manlier.
No, it's because I was tired of being treated like a dirty criminal when I went to buy razor blades.
What do you mean?
Well, when you go to the drugstore, you walk back to the back, and the razor blades are all in the special locked space, and you have to go find somebody, and then they have to bring a key, and they look at you like, are you going to pocket these as soon as I take them out for you?
Wow.
I hated that, so I just grew a beard.
That's why I order everything online.
Well, you don't have to feel like a criminal, and you can order your shaving supplies online if you go to harrys.com and use offer code Untitled to get $5 off. Harry's is a subscription service. One of the founders actually founded Warby Parker, who makes eyeglasses. We like them, too. And they send you razors and blades and shaving supplies through the mail. It's really hassle-free. It's much cheaper than buying the brand name stuff at grocery stores, drug stores, all that. And I used it this morning to trim up under the beard and up on the neck and, do a little manscaping.
You get a starter kit.
You get $5 off of any order if you go to harrys.com and use offer code Untitled.
And that's Harry's, H-A-R-R-Y-S.
Yes. Thanks to Harry's for supporting Still Untitled. And I guess now it's time to start the show. Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
I have something in my eye.
Oh, no.
Nope. Okay.
Norm's right. Microphone's down low, but we're good now.
I've been woodworking all morning.
Uh-huh.
So
proper eye protection, I'm sure.
Well, there's just dust everywhere.
That is a problem when you're woodworking.
Hey, this morning.
Yes.
A rare occurrence. I woke up and heard the of the garbage truck.
Uh-huh.
Made it downstairs in time to get my garbage on the street.
You made the run.
And picked up. Yeah.
That is hard
so
to do.
The run is just... So I didn't know what this
The meant. Run is, I forgot to put my garbage out last night.
Yeah.
Tonight is garbage night in my neighborhood.
So yeah. I have forgotten to put my garbage out before, but I feel like sometimes they do two passes.
Well, in my house, they do... A compost pass, a recycling pass, and a trash pass,
yes.
All in the same night.
Yeah, they do. But here in my neighborhood, I think that the trash pass, how does this work? I think one of them happens at like 6 a.m.
Okay.
And then the other two are like 8 and 9 a.m.
It's never at the same time for
it's
me.
Never at the same time?
Never at the same time. I can leave and the neighbors, all the garbage will be out. Yeah. Missing the run is the worst thing.
The missing the run is...
Because you're paying a lot per month.
And you can also actually... You can get them to make a special trip.
That's no...
It's like an extra $30 or something.
Yeah.
I don't even know how much it is.
When I lived in Tennessee in the deep suburbs, in the real suburbs, not like toy suburbs like we have here where it's dense. But one morning I woke up and I heard the trash go... And I chased him down the street with the cans.
Nice.
Like I was dragging. And this wasn't fancy wheeled cans. It was like the metal banging cans.
At that point, you're making his morning.
I figure I gave him a story.
Extra enjoyment.
I was in my underwear running down the street as fast as I could, barefoot, screaming, stop, stop.
Right. And he's like, oh, cool. Now I got a story.
Is that interesting? Is the iconic, the prototypical garbage can in all our minds, even though none of us have used this garbage can for years, is still
the galvanized
metal cylinder.
I used those for kindling. They're great for that. So that's where the kindling
from our fireplace. We use them on the show, but that's because they're quintessential garbage.
Exactly.
Yes. It's what Oscar lives in.
Exactly. Thank you, Oscar the Grouch.
I will tell you also that if your Frisbee gets eaten by a dog or bitten in half by a dog,
mm-hmm.
which happened to me on somebody's birthday 20 some odd years ago, one of those galvanized steel garbage can lids flies magnificently.
Never forget.
It was a 180-gram Frisbee. It was the really nice big one.
I have my childhood Frisbee, my glow-in-the-dark one. It hangs inside my garage, so when I leave the lights on, I go out to turn the lights off at night.
That's
it's
very
glows. Cool. Makes me happy every time. Mm. You had kind of an adventure last night, three nights ago.
Which one are you referring to?
When you interviewed Spinal Tap.
Yes! Okay, so I interviewed Spinal Tap on stage here in San Francisco as part of Sketchfest. We've been doing lots of Sketchfest stuff.
It's Sketchfest. We should explain what Sketchfest is, because probably people don't know.
Sketchfest is a two-week-plus festival of comedy that takes place in San Francisco. It was started by Janet Varney and Cole Stratton, and I'm forgetting the third guy's name.
David?
Yes, David. Wow, he's going to kill me. Sorry, David.
David the Third Man.
Fuck, what an asshole.
Just leave a blank here, and I'll dub it in.
Thank you. Just dub it in. Like,
in my voice.
David...
And
there we go.
Yes.
And Janet is a friend of mine. Cole has become a friend of mine, and so has David. And I've done lots of stuff for them over the years when they come. So I've interviewed all the puppeteers from Labyrinth on stage at the Castro. Ooh. I've participated with Riff Trax, Bill Corbett, Kevin Murphy, those guys on stage at the Castro multiple times. We do a Woodstock Founders Night every year.
So it's not just stand-up comedy.
No, it's not stand-up.
It's all kinds of comedy.
No, it's all kinds of comedy. It is storytelling. It is stand-up. It is,
retrospective.
Retrospective tributes. Mm-hmm. So we did a tribute to Spinal Tap and Harry Shearer, Michael McKean, and Christopher Guest. Now, I know Christopher Guest a little bit. We are social and friendly. His son has watched by default, a tremendous amount of Mythbusters over the years, and that's how we met.
And you interviewed mm-hmm. him.
I interviewed him on stage at the Norse as part of City Arts and Lectures mm-hmm. Last year, actually.
Mm. Wow.
And I was nervous about this interview. These guys are like legends.
Well, they have they clearly have worked together long enough, not just on Spinal Tap, but on other stuff too, right. That they have a rhythm and a language that, like, they know what the jokes, what the punchlines are going
to
be.
I don't know whether I'm going to be able to be part of that or not, and which is going to be funny. And also, I don't even know, like, do they still like each other? I really didn't know the answers to these.
It's kind of like Monty Python.
Right. You wonder what it's going to be like to get them right. all in the same room.
Well, and the added layer that they're a rock band, they're a faux rock band, right. So they could come out and just decide to be dicks during the interview right. with you, because that's a thing that rock bands
right.
do.
So, in addition to all this, the Norse is right around the corner from Tracy Desjardins' restaurant Jardiniere, so I offered to buy them dinner, and that was pro forma. I didn't think they would accept, because I thought, these three cranky old guys, they've been in show business forever. They don't want to go out to dinner with their moderator.
Right.
They accepted.
Wow.
and look, all of this is by way of saying we had a fantastic dinner. They're lovely guys. They still love each other. They still make each other laugh hysterically, which they did repeatedly throughout dinner. So it was like, it was Spinal Tap fantasy camp for me, watching these guys sort of play off of each other.
Oh, yeah.
Watching them riff on different things, seeing the different bents of each of their senses of humor. I'm such a huge... I've been a huge fan of all of theirs for decades, right?
Independently also.
Independently.
For their project.
Yeah. Chris and Michael wrote one of my favorite early film school movies, The Big Picture, with Kevin Bacon. It's a fantastic movie. And then Christopher Guest was, of course, the Six-Fingered Man in Princess Bride. Mm-hmm. Michael McKean, Lenny of Lenny and Squiggy, of Laverne and Shirley. I didn't even realize until a few years ago they were actually writers on that show.
Oh, yeah.
In addition to being characters.
Well, TV back then was a much lower production affair.
Harry Shearer, in addition to doing dozens of voices on The Simpsons for the last 25 years, also hosts one of my favorite Sunday radio shows, Le Show, out of Los Angeles, actually now out of New Orleans, where he lives. I've been listening to that for over 20 years. So, independently, all three of these guys have really infused me and my perception of our culture, my politics, my sense of humor. And I was not disappointed at all. They're just, dinner was lovely. The interview was lovely. It was very, very funny. And I actually got a laugh from Chris on stage.
Ooh. So what did everybody order? Do you remember?
Michael had the cod. Was it the cod?
Fish of some
snapper.
Kind.
He had the snapper. Harry had the steak, and Chris and I each had the burger. Now, the burger isn't on the regular menu at Jardiniere. It's their bar menu, but Tracy's burger is my favorite burger in San Francisco.
It is a really good burger. And it's a good burger town, just to be clear.
Yes.
Like, there are lots of good burgers here.
So that was just that was fantastic. I came home like on a cloud.
I'm sure.
To tell my wife all about it. It was fantastic. It was a really lovely evening.
Awesome.
I have to imagine those guys are so sick of the 11 joke at this point.
Yes. Well, there was someone who named their daughter 11. That 11 was her middle name.
I can see that. I mean, that's not it. Middle names. Daughter middle names are throwaways, right? Like, that's you can do whatever you want there.
I guess it could be.
Yeah.
You have to consider that they'll often take their middle name after having changed their name post-divorce. That has happened.
That'd be an awesome last name. Hi, I'm 11. Ruth 11.
Ruth 11.
Yeah, what? You sound like a robot. What else is going on?
I wanted to... this inspired drone. I've been flying this thing constantly.
And this is your first kind of This is like your first unsupervised quad flying. Like, yeah, you have them at work and stuff.
I had a couple of the Parrot drones. Mm-hmm. I didn't find them that easy to fly. I didn't find them that useful.
The iPhone controls were bad.
And the footage, the low-res footage was shite. The Inspire, on the other hand, is a magnificent piece of kit that I'm continually blown away by. And I know that, you know, Jamie and I were at their launch event for the Inspire. So you should take my opinion with a grain of salt. But I swear, up and down, this thing is incredible.
Just that thing exists, all of those things, like from the $500 kit quads that you put together at home, all the way up to $3,000 or $4,000 for something that's semi-pro level in a lot of cases, is amazing.
I think there are a couple of interesting things about your experience so far with the Inspire. So we've gone on a couple trips, and there's video that's going to be on the site. I think it might already be on the site about one of our trips. But you're approaching it from a kind of a videographer and photographer
perspective. I'm thinking of it solely as a camera platform.
It is a camera platform for you. You're not flying it like a lot of people do with quadcopters, you know, whether it's a consumer quadcopter or something they built themselves, like a racing quadcopter. You're not in it for the aerobatics or any of that, or an RC. Like, it is a camera platform.
Yeah. So I want to show you a couple of things.
Yes.
So Norm and I, you couldn't come out on Saturday, Will, but Norm and I went out with my kids and I got to see, I got a little uptight, I will admit.
It's high stress.
Well, and I was telling them, this thing costs a lot of money.
You let the boys fly.
And the price of failure is high.
You should have had Norm bring our Phantom to let them practice on.
I did have. I just had enough batteries. Big differences between those quadcopters. I mean, we'll talk more about it when we actually go in depth into the technology and in a separate tested video. But the DJI, just this one company with these two classes of quadcopters, the Phantom is something that is very maneuverable. Not as maneuverable as, you know, your own 250mm quad, but you can, you know, you can turn off the safety modes, you can do flips, you can race them.
You can get kind of crazy with it.
The Inspire is not. It's like a
just
tank.
A camera platform. So
it drives like a Cadillac, right? It rides like your living room.
So we're looking at footage now. We're going to try to at least
I can include it.
Or links to this.
So here now, this is real time.
Wow. So you're doing speed ramps and stuff in Premiere or iTunes or iMovie or something?
Holy moly.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Oh, you flew over that thing?
I flew through it.
Can we show this?
I think this is...
Yeah, we can show.
So this is where we should talk about safety, right?
Well, okay, so...
And safety is the other unique thing I think Adam brings to it.
Understand that, I wouldn't have done that if I didn't feel 100% confident that that would have come out okay. I didn't fly from the same place we'd flown from earlier. I was line of sight. And even still, I watched as I passed by the metal gantry.
Yeah.
I watched my signal get spotty.
Mm-hmm.
I had reset my top height.
Okay.
So that it was higher than that
your
thing.
Your return home height.
Okay.
It's a new piece of kit. And as such, I get my own little obsessive ways with it. So I immediately built a plywood launch table that holds the Inspire on one side and has a felt bottomed compartment on the other side for the transmitter so that I can move around with the camera and I'm not doing it kneeling on the ground, which is what a lot of people I'm seeing doing.
It's not a good way to do any kind of fine
work. My back hurts and I'm older and I want to be sitting upright. I'm actually putting camping chairs on the list of gear to go out with every single time now.
Okay. Next is the cooler and the barbecue.
You're treating it like a piece of your equipment that you're going to train with. You're logging your hours.
I'm logging my hours. Now, I'm logging my hours also because I want to use this thing professionally. I figure that at a certain point when the FAA gets its head out of its butt and realizes that having only licensed airplane pilots or helicopter pilots be allowed to fly these things commercially is so ludicrous that they're actually going to turn towards hobbyists and they're going to want to have some documentation of what level of flyer are you if you are going to apply for certification. So I'm logging every single hour, every single battery, and I started a real flight log in one of the field notes books.
Okay.
And I'm logging date, time, duration, how many batteries worth of flying, how many minutes of footage I'm gathering, weather conditions, who is in attendance, etc. And that's also just because, like, when I'm enjoying something, I like kind of cascade effects of all the data around it.
But you kind of go otaku.
What's that?
You kind of go otaku.
I go otaku, yes, man. And I've also been making a checklist, mm-hmm. which is really important because, you know, even though the Inspire makes a lot of things really easy, you do want to pay attention to the buildings around you, what the minimum height will be for return, because if you lose signal, the Inspire will rise to that height and fly across you. And if you have set a height lower than the buildings you're in, it's just going to fly into
trees, buildings, power lines, the whole thing. Yeah.
You want to choose a clear frequency. You want to look at the frequency spread and choose one that's not alone among a lot of interference. You want to choose one within a field of some clear signals.
That's especially important when you're in dense urban areas where there's a lot of competition for open spectrum.
And I have noticed glitches in my video transmitting just by flying next to Norm.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah.
With signals with
Phantom.
If we're doing other type of production with microphones, you know, all the frequencies, or other
Absolutely.
People with
well,
other
yeah.
quadcopters.
When you watch the video of Norm and I racing at CES, you could see the interference, and that was on an analog spectrum. So it's the interference is literally visible from the other quads that were flying around at the same time.
So I've been building this checklist, and I've been building a pre-flight checklist.
Mm-hmm.
A gear checklist of what you can't leave the house without.
Mm-hmm.
A flight checklist, which often includes the protocol for landing and taking off again, like turn off the battery after it lands. The Inspire has a specific thing where the battery, like you could pull a live battery and it stays on. And I just feel like that's bad form.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
You don't want that sitting in your thing.
You mean the battery stays on,
The battery stays on,
obviously.
Right. So turn the battery off, swap it out, put it back, make sure your signal's good, hover in front of you for mm-hmm. 30 seconds, make sure the controls work the way you think, and then take off.
Yes.
This is to me like using a table saw. Every time I approach it, I'm going to expect that this thing could fly into something and be a really bad situation.
You're always aware of what it's over, and you're always preparing your mind for the worst possible consequences. You mentioned something like one of the reasons that airplanes and airlines are so statistically safe is because they have the pre-flight checklist that they go over no matter what.
No matter what. No, I mean, well, 99% of the time, most of the things on that checklist are have no need to be checked. They never don't do it.
The other thing you said, the constant spatial awareness and situational awareness is really important. I have a friend who flies little small airplanes. He owns a small Cessna and had an engine failure while he was flying in the mountains in Northeast Tennessee.
Yeah.
And he landed the plane underneath high tension wires, went underneath high tension wires, landed on a hill at a field at a 35 degree angle.
Oh my God.
And they had to dismantle the plane to get it out of the field because there were trees and stuff blocking the rest of it. He said the only reason he lived through that is because every moment he's flying, he's always looking, where's my next place I'm going to land? Where's my next place I'm going to land? Where's the next place I'm going
to
land?
I was amazed when Jamie and I once chartered a helicopter to get to a location. It sounds pretty rock star, but it's actually cheaper than flying commercial to get to Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
The helicopters follow freeways.
Mm-hmm.
They don't fly as a crow flies because if it has to go down, you don't want to end up 2 miles from everywhere.
Right. You want to be next to the freeway where the truck can come pick you up.
So then yesterday afternoon, I was flying in a San Francisco park. And it was great because all the San Francisco parks were empty yesterday because of the Super Bowl.
Oh, right.
I decided at the end of the day to fly down this wooded path just to try a little bit of flying down a wooded path.
Indoor.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
But I want to show you what happened. Here, let's see here. So here is flying down the wooded path. And this looks great, mm-hmm. right? That is totally amazing.
Looks really good.
I'm facing west. The sun is setting.
And are you walking behind it as
no,
you do this?
No, I'm not. And so right about here, I'm like, I'm kind of nervous. Okay, pause right there. Now I'm going to turn it around, except I got my controls wrong. Oh. Yeah.
Wow.
I hit the branch and somehow did not lose Inspire. Now, it really wouldn't have gotten super damaged. This is a steep hillside with lots of bushes and everything.
You're not that high off
That's
the ground.
That's new props.
No, I'm about 8 feet off the ground, but here's me getting it back out.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll put that up on the site,
too.
Yeah.
You know, again, you can see I'm making sure I'm flying where there's, you know, nobody's there, nobody I can fly into.
Mm-hmm. You have the line of sight between you and the quad.
Line of sight, yeah,
you're
exactly.
Keeping in front of you, yeah.
But I mean, safety with these things, we've talked about this a little bit on This Is Only a Test as well with Jeremy, who's also a quad flyer.
Yeah.
And you know, it starts with the realization that what you essentially have is a cinder block with some propellers on it.
Right.
And that if you do something that makes it fall from the sky, it's going to be really scary. And I think, I don't know if you've crashed anything yet, Norm.
Have you? I have not crashed it.
We were flying, when we were test flying one of the 3D robotics quads, we lost one propeller shot up because I didn't put Loctite on the nuts and they didn't use lock nuts. It's a by eight though. So still fine. But then the vibrations that happened from that made the other propeller shoot off the bottom. And at that point, it was the scariest thing I've ever seen. Cause I was close enough, you know, as soon as the first propeller went off, I immediately started bringing it down to land.
Yeah.
But we were still probably 4 or 5 feet off the ground when the second one shot off. And I mean, there's literally nothing you can do. So you always have to be aware. That's why you shouldn't fly over crowds, even with multiple redundancies and all that stuff. Don't fly where there's other people. Don't fly where you can hurt someone or interfere with somebody. You know, follow the rules. There are good rules posted.
Well, and let me put it even further. The drone hobby, which is now becoming so much more than a hobby, is fantastic and includes some really breathtaking technology being developed by some incredibly bright companies. I mean, I'm just gobsmacked by how complete the system for the Inspire really is in terms of all the ways it unifies these myriad systems that people have been bolting together, like really clever people have been bolting together in kit form for so long. They make it a one-stop shop. But it is still a nascent hobby. And if we, the people who enjoy this hobby, and I'm a new one, want to enjoy it fully, it is up to every single one of us to realize we represent the hobby. So anybody out there with a quad who's not flying it safely can potentially drunkenly drop it on the White House lawn, and all of a sudden Congress wants to pass some really stupid legislation about it because of one incident.
Well, and
that's very dangerous.
And by passing, right, everybody's the representative of their hobby, which is something that the amateur airplane flyers and helicopter flyers have understood really, really well for a long time.
And the FAA, actually, I was reading the regulations last night. Among the regulations for more than X number of pound for hobby planes of higher than a certain amount of poundage.
It's like 3 kilograms or something, right?
Yeah. You can fly them higher if you have a certification from your local community-based flying group. Mm-hmm. So the FAA recognizes the authority and the ability of local groups to self-police, which is fantastic. That's exactly the way all this should work. So I just made a sample checklist here, but on the bottom, I just thought I should put a slogan: go slow, don't be an idiot. Those are two great axioms to follow. You know, if you're not sure what's happening, stop.
Well, the reduced barrier to entry creates a really false sense of security.
Yes. That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
That you are just as capable as someone who's been doing it for 10, 15 years.
Well, you don't have the instincts.
No.
Like, I mean, even Norm and I, who've flown quite a bit at this point, don't have that always looking for a place to land instinct, and don't have the kind of reactions that people who are even novice racers have when they don't have to think, oh, okay, right stick is this, left stick is this.
Well, that's muscle memory
just happens.
And that's what I'm trying to do right now. Is I'm trying to go out every day, every couple of days, just logging more and more flight hours until the thing really, I felt it yesterday. It's starting to map into my head, right? So that I can start to do those, like, four fingers moving at once in concert to get this panning, tracking, swooping shot that I want to get. It's awesome, but it really takes a lot of practice to be able to, one, use it to film with, but also fly it safe.
Well, it's analogous to driving a car, right? Yeah. There's a reason that most people have accidents. If you have most, there's an average of one accident per lifetime, and most of those happen between the ages of 16 and 20.
Oh, really?
And it's because it takes X number of years. Yeah. This is why all the driver's license legislation is changing across the country, is it takes a long period of time to change your sensorium to detect the car as the body analog, and just know, like, right after you've been driving for 10 years, you know, okay, this is how big my car is, this is how it goes. And when you get a new car, you have to adjust to that, but it doesn't take very long. When you're first learning to drive, it takes a really long time to get an innate sense of how big the car is and what kind of space you take up. And once you've logged enough flight hours with a quad to do the same thing, then you have that same ability, but it you have to really work at it.
The term that I've been using more and more lately, because we use it on Mythbusters when we're talking about this stuff, is proprioception. And I've said it on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. It means your spatial awareness of your body or the thing you're in and the space around you. Mm-hmm. And proprioception is, it's hard to develop in new vehicles and with new devices, but it's absolutely vital in order to do it safely.
That's what Batman would do.
It is what Batman would do. So
mind your surroundings.
I'll give you the files for this checklist. You post them, and I'd love feedback for other things that should go on there. I've tried to be pretty complete and pretty cross-platform. I recognize that all drones are different and systems are different, but still choosing clear frequencies and many best practices apply across them.
Well, and I mean, the other thing to always be aware of is that sometimes things go wrong that are completely outside of your control or preparation, and you have to be aware of that and be ready to deal with that too. So whether it's the quad taking off in one direction with no human input accessible, which happens to all the time to lots of different quads, or
there's new malware.
Really?
There's new malware that actively takes over the quad itself.
I didn't know that. That's terrifying.
Yeah, I was just reading about that yesterday, I think on Gizmodo. I can't remember when. But yeah, terrifying. Oof.
Technology. Yeah.
Well, and basically that's just going to force companies like 3D Robotics and DJI to have countermeasures for that sort of thing. Not just have it be open.
Open Wi-Fi signals, which is what everybody uses now. The other thing
could possibly go wrong?
No, DEF CON. You know.
Fly your quad at DEF CON. Yeah.
Look, I think the main thing that I wanted just to talk about is that really everybody who's flying a drone, even little tiny ones, you fly a little tiny 5-ounce drone into your brother's eye and the news will cover it. Right. Like, so every one of us is responsible for, you know, you like this thing, then consider yourself responsible for representing the hobby and think about it like that with the stuff you do.
Well, and one last smaller note, when you're dealing with something like this, we're used to, especially nerds, we're used to just updating firmwares and updating drivers and stuff like that without really thinking about it. Because, you know, on your PC, you get a bad firmware update. What's the worst thing that happens? You roll back and everything's fine. With this, if you get a bad firmware update, there are real consequences. So when you do things like update your firmware, update to a new version of the software, you should really treat it as if it's a brand new device, at least for that first flight.
And go on the forums and check out other people's results with upgrading that firmware. You know, if you it would be ridiculous to, like, a firmware update comes online at midnight for you to be flying at 6 a.m. the next morning in a public space with that firmware update is crazy. Mm-hmm. You need to
Would you want to update the firmware for your car?
Right.
And just take it on the freeway the next day?
Remember the most recent iPhone update?
That's the phone. Oops, we're going to do over, guys. I mean, of course, theoretically, the people that are making the quads, whether it's DJI or APM Copter or 3D Robotics or whoever, is doing more testing than I would think you would do.
Of course they are.
But still, you know, you're the one that's responsible at the end of the day. If your quad takes off because you put a bad firmware update and forgot to recalibrate the compass or whatever.
And it's like more than who's responsible. Yeah. It's like if it goes and hits somebody, it doesn't matter who's responsible. That's a terrible thing to happen.
Well, I mean, yeah, but you, like, that's you. That's on you.
Yeah.
You have to live with that.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. Totally. That's the thing you have to keep in mind. So, okay, this was kind of a downer at the end, but there's a lot of neat stuff.
Yeah, it is really, like, I can't describe my joy at playing with this thing and filming. The multi-rotors have added tremendously to MythBusters' production value over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Duncan Clark, our second camera op, does amazing stuff with it. And this copter, quad, drone.
Mm-hmm. Multi-rotor.
Multi-rotor, sorry. UAS, unmanned.
UAV.
UAV has some shooting people
UAV,
connotations.
But there's also,
good.
I think the
air
FAA
system,
refers
yes,
to it UAS.
Unmanned
aerial system.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. The UAS is so much fun, and it's been occurring to me more and more. We should be talking about the keepsake.
Just out of curiosity, did you buy one of those micro nano quads to practice flying before you got the Inspiron?
You know, Duncan actually gave me one of the super micro ones. I found it super hard to fly, super hard to trim, and super hard to fly.
Some are definitely better than others. Norm has a Hubson that he recommends, I know. I actually saw, when I was in Chicago, a straight out of China $15 gyro and accelerometer stabilized micro that was that was about the size of a silver dollar.
Crazy.
And that thing was surprisingly easy to fly.
I have been using DJI's flight simulator as well. I've been logging some hours with the flight simulator just to get a feel for, you know.
So do you run that on your Mac or is it run on your iPad or something?
On the app.
Okay.
Yeah, you run it right out of the DJI Pilot app on the iPad on the controller.
Using the sticks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have to turn on the multi-rotor you have to turn on the Inspire because Eric Chang told me it's actually using the drone software to work with the flight simulator.
So you take the props off or something, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Indeed. Cool. Well, that's as good a place as any to wrap this up, I think.
I think so.
But we will be back next week with another episode of Still Entitled. Leave comments. Let us know what you think, things that we are or are not being safe about. I know you're going to do it anyway, so we might as well invite it. And we will be back next week with another edition of Still Entitled. Thanks for watching, guys.
Bye.
Bye.